into that guy to win their admiration. But my dad's talent for projecting the perfect image to impress a crowd wasn't limited to high society Greenwich types. He could do it anywhere with anyone. Here's how it worked. When my dad arrived at a party, the first thing he did was read the room. He wanted to know the general makeup of the crowd, who was there, what their preferences, values, and expectations were, as if trying to answer the questions, what persona do I need to craft and put on to win these people's approval? Who do they want me to become before they'll love and admire me? And once he knew the answer to those questions, and I'm telling you, that only took 30 seconds, he performed an instant makeover and became, quote-unquote, that guy. Seriously, I once witnessed my dad walk into a group of car mechanics standing around a service station garage. And before you could say carburetor, he picked up on their mannerisms, talk style, mood, and general demeanor. My dad didn't know the difference between a muffler and a glove compartment. But by the time we left, I'm telling you, those mechanics thought he could have been the host of NPR's Car Talk. The Three's Deadly Sin. I wouldn't blame you if after reading these stories you pegged my dad as a poser. But would you feel more compassion toward him if you knew he created and projected his shimmering image of success and achievement as defined by whatever crowd he was with because he believed that being, or at least looking, successful was the only way he could prove his worth and win love? Would your heart warm toward him if you knew that from the time he was a boy, he thought he had to constantly craft his image to win other people's approval until eventually he couldn't tell the difference between his fake image and his authentic self anymore? This is the performer's snare. According to the Enneagram, the deadly sin of the performer is deceit. Not because they deceive others, as much as because they deceive themselves. As Nathaniel Hawthorne wrote, "No man, for any considerable period, can wear one face to himself and another to the multitude without finally getting bewildered as to which may be the true." In crafting a persona that will impress and perhaps even help them form relationships with high-influence people who can help them get ahead socially or professionally, threes lose touch with who they authentically are. In time, they so over-identify with their glittering persona that their true self gets lost in the performance. They, along with everyone else, are fooled into believing their false image is who they really are. The strategy of projecting a false image to meet an unmet need is not unique to threes. All of the numbers in the feeling or heart triad, remember, that's twos, threes, and fours, reject the idea that they can be seen for who they are and unconditionally loved. So they abandon their true selves to inhabit roles. Twos throw up a chirpy, likable image they can change in a heartbeat to please people they're with. Fours, and this is a spoiler alert, project an image of uniqueness for reasons you'll learn about shortly. And threes, they cast an image of success and achievement to win admiration. Immature threes need to win and make it look easy. For them, taking second place is a patronizing euphemism for being the first loser. Whether they're in the classroom, on the athletic field, on a trading floor, on a stage, pastoring a megachurch, in the boardroom, or serving the poor, threes have to be the star. Because threes grow up believing the world only values people for what they do rather than for who they are, becoming king or queen of the hill is a matter of life or death. Confusing success for love, Threes who lack self-awareness have to ace every test, close every deal, deliver a sermon that rivals the I Have a Dream speech every Sunday, and break every corporate sales record. Life is all about racking up accomplishments that garner applause. Threes are shapeshifters who can switch personas to match the environment. Threes don't have one persona. We are legion. That's what a pastor and now spiritually self-aware three once half-joked with me. At a recent workshop, a sharply dressed woman came up during a break after a talk on threes and confessed, "My business partner swears she can hear the sound of my audience analysis software launching in my brain when we walk into a room full of potential clients. Before the introductions are over, I know exactly who I have to become to close the deal." Unaware threes are social chameleons. As you can imagine, however, their ability to create and project the image to make the sale or get the girl or guy can leave them wondering what their authentic self is. Once in a blue moon, when threes slow down long enough to reflect on their lives, they might feel like they're a fraud. I wear 1,000 masks, but which is the authentic me? When this flash of insight comes to them, it surfaces a three's worst fear. What if there's no one behind the image? What if I'm no more than an empty suit? Unless threes have a wise spiritual advisor who helps them stay with that feeling of emptiness long enough to give their authentic self a chance to emerge, they will panic and retreat behind their persona again, this time redoubling their efforts to succeed and impress in order to mask their emptiness. More often than not, it takes a fall on the scale of a Greek tragedy before a three wakes up and realizes that the quote, "to thine own self be true," is a better life motto than "image is everything." I like changing personalities. Mick Jagger. All about threes or performers. There's a lot to love about healthy threes. They're optimistic, resilient people with audacious dreams who inspire others. When they're spiritually healthy and self-aware, they have nothing to prove. They want to talk about your dreams and celebrate your accomplishments rather than flaunt their own achievements or sell you a line. There's not a hint of falseness about an evolved three. They're no longer terrified of failure, and they share openly about what they've learned from their mistakes. They're generous and wise, and often volunteer their considerable skills to helping organizations be more effective at achieving their mission. Yet, there is a sad restlessness for unhealthy threes, always striving, always keeping an eye out for advancement. Politically savvy and dressed to kill, they're somehow always working a crowd as if asking, "How am I doing? How am I doing?" Some threes get squirrely when they have too much downtime in one place, so they need activity-based vacations like a scuba diving trip or a bike trip across France, and good luck convincing them not to bring a suitcase full of work along with them. As Hurley and Donson note, sometimes threes will pretend to be interested in conversations with people when they're not. If they know you're not a player or think you're not interesting enough, they'll smile and nod like they're hanging on your every word, when they're actually making a real estate deal or producing a record in their head, or periodically glancing over your shoulder to see who and where the real players in the room are. Recently, Suzanne and I spoke at a conference where the audience was full of very successful men and women. One night, a corporate lawyer in his mid-60s named David shared with the group how he had once believed life was all about what you owned, who you knew, and how good you looked, until at age 50, he had a meet Jesus crisis that brought him face to face with himself. I've put a lot of effort into knowing and becoming my true self, David said, touching his hand to his heart. Today, I think far less about working and winning, and more about Daviding. David is a highly evolved three. He no longer believes he has to work 80-hour weeks and be widely acknowledged as the best at everything he does to be loved. In general, threes have more difficulty recognizing and connecting to their feelings than any other number on the Enneagram. Not only do they not pick up on their own feelings, they won't pick up on yours very well either. Remember how we saw in the last chapter that twos may be clueless about their own emotions, but can zero in to yours with the accuracy of Doppler radar? Threes are just plain in the dark about feelings, their own and yours as well. Threes do feelings more than have feelings. Because they can't access or recognize their feelings very well, threes will unconsciously observe how other people are expressing their emotions and copy them. What gives away the fact that they aren't actually connecting to the sorrow they're visibly expressing at a funeral by looking sad is that they can be thinking about an unfinished work project at the same time. Threes can mask and postpone feelings so they won't blow their "I have it all together" cover. In the moment, they can be feeling depressed, angry, or scared, and maintain their upbeat, confident poker face. At the end of the day, threes care most about efficiency and completing a task. Feelings are messy, and they slow your progress toward your goal, so threes don't spend too much time on them. According to Riso and Hudson, the message threes picked up in childhood is that it's not okay to have your own identity or feelings. As kids, threes felt they needed to set aside their true selves to become the perfect prototype of whatever sort of person the important people in their lives associated with success. I once said to a three in his spiritual journey, "How much you must have loved your father that you left your true self behind to please him." The man wept, as if relieved to know that love, not emptiness, lay behind his mask. Here's a question. What would incentivize threes to change in a culture that applauds and rewards them for embodying our cultural definition of success? Listen, America is a three country. Countless numbers of us look at threes and think, "Man, I wish I were him or her." I say this because we are all complicit in perpetuating a world that encourages these wonderful folks to continue living in service to a lie. It's wrong of us to ask threes to use their gifts to help grow our companies or raise money for our church's capital campaign, especially since when we're done using them, we turn around and criticize them behind their backs for being inauthentic or narcissistic. This is one reason Suzanne and I love the Enneagram. Doesn't knowing the worldview and motivation that drives a three's personality help awaken in our hearts some compassion for their, and hopefully every other, number's plight? We're awestruck when we meet a three who is evolving spiritually despite having to get up every day and swim against the riptide of our success-oriented, image-obsessed culture. And there are plenty of these good people around doing the work of becoming themselves. They're saints in the making. And though we can only speculate, Taylor Swift, Mitt Romney, and Tom Cruise all exhibit the classic traits of the Enneagram 3, the performer. Threes as children. Early in life, threes pick up the wounding message, "You are what you do." As a result, They become high-performance achievement machines, striving to excel and be acknowledged for their accomplishments because they constitute the basis of their identity. If they sense their parents or culture prize academic achievement above all else, they'll set their sights on going to Harvard while they're still in middle school. Likewise, if threes grow up in a culture or family where climbing the ranks of the mafia to become a don represents ultimate success, then that will become their life's goal. It's strange, I know, but it's all contextual. The saddest thing of all is how a three will conform to their family's or culture's preferred image, even if it means having to become someone who bears no resemblance to who they truly are, or doing things that go against their true nature. Tennis player Andre Agassi has a story like this. In 1991, Agassi appeared in a television ad for a camera called the Canon Rebel. In the commercial, the cocky, fashionably attired super athlete steps out of a white Lamborghini, casts an insouciant gaze toward the camera, lowers his Ray-Bans halfway down his nose, and declares, "Image is everything." Huh. Oh, to be young and three. In his memoir, Open, Agassi describes growing up with a father whose love for him was tied to his performance on the court. Agassi shocked the world when in his book he publicly confessed for the first time that he had hated playing tennis from the time he first picked up a racket to the day he retired. What drove him to become a champion wasn't a passion for the game, but his desire to win the heart of a father whom he describes as unable to, quote, tell the difference between loving me and loving tennis, unquote. Other threes describe growing up in homes where they worried that parents, peers, or coaches would overlook or forget them if they didn't bring home extraordinary grades or trophies. My friend Alan's parents grew up dirt poor. Growing up, they repeatedly told Alan and his twin brother, "We want you to do more with your lives than we did with ours." Early on, when both kids began bringing home straight A's and excelling at basketball, Alan's mom and dad became so ecstatic and heaped so much praise on them that they felt they had no choice but to keep it up. "My parents are great, and they loved us more than anything in the world," Alan says now. "They just had no idea how much pressure they were putting on us to succeed. It would break their hearts if they knew we grew up unconsciously believing their love for us was conditioned on our kicking ass at everything we did and how scared we were of disappointing them. They never once said, 'We'll only love you if you succeed.' But we were kids, and that's what we unconsciously heard." Sadly, the unlived lives of parents sometimes push their children toward destinies not of their own choosing. Kids who are threes wake up in the morning with a plan for their day. Socially aware, they know what they're going to wear to school and who they'll sit with at lunch. They know who the cool kids are and may go against their own feelings or wishes in order to be accepted in their circle. These kids come tricked out with all the onboard equipment they need to achieve and succeed. They try to do things that are valued by the people around them, and they take it hard when they fail. They are focused and naturally competitive because they believe they are loved for their achievements. These are the kids who want to stand out, and they do. Our deepest calling is to grow into our own authentic selfhood, whether or not it conforms to some image of who we ought to be. Parker Palmer. Threes in relationships. As the number least in touch with their feelings on the Enneagram, it only makes sense that threes would have things to work out in the relationship department. As part of their larger self-marketing campaign, spiritually unaware threes will want to project the image of the perfect family to the outside world. But keeping up appearances can exhaust their partners and kids. Out of touch with their feelings and eager to make the right impression, threes can consciously or unconsciously act the role of the quintessential devoted parent and spouse. Other threes on autopilot can unconsciously view their partner or their relationship with them like an action item on their task management list. Those people can become one of the many projects they're working on at any given time. For instance, you might hear threes talk about how they and their partner sit down once a year to set spiritual, financial, physical, or social goals for their marriage or relationship, or to discuss ways in which they can make the day-to-day management of the family more efficient or productive. Now look, being intentional about relationships is admirable, so long as they remain spiritual unions we cultivate, not business partnerships we manage. Without exception, the relationships of spiritually unevolved threes suffer because they're almost all workaholics. They have so many projects running and so many goals to achieve, they can't give their undivided attention to people they love. As Helen Palmer remarks, a three's heart is in their work. So whatever feelings they have are used toward accomplishing a goal or task, and there's not much left over for other people. Threes have a supernatural talent for multitasking. They can simultaneously juggle driving, closing a multi-million-dollar deal on their cell phone, eating a sandwich, listening to an audiobook version of David Allen's bestseller, Getting Things Done, and conversing with their spouse about a problem one of the kids is having at school. It's not merely impressive, like it's Cirque du Soleil impressive. Unless, of course, you're their partner, child, or friend, who feels devalued and less important than the three's ambitions. Because threes alter their appearance to win over different types of people, they keep their circle of friends separate from one another. If they threw a party and mistakenly invited all their friends from the different spheres of their lives, they'd lose their minds. No one can change hats that fast. Threes prize friendships that are free and undemanding. Life is all about getting things done. So threes steer away from high maintenance, complicated, or demanding friendships that take time and energy away from accomplishing goals. The defensive strategy of threes is identification. Threes defend themselves against harm by completely immersing themselves in the task they're performing, or equating their identity with their title in the institutions for which they work. Because of this, threes will defend their firm's reputation or the crazy number of hours they spend at the office to the death. As Richard Rohr observes, the saddest number on the Enneagram is an unsuccessful three, one whose ambitions were greater than their talent. I would add that it's heartbreaking to meet threes in the second half of life who never woke up to their own game. It's a terrible thing to be seated next to a 70-year-old guy at a dinner party who was still dropping names, telling you where he went to college, or boasting about how young he was when he made partner and how much money he cashed out with at retirement. Threes at work. If it's not clear already, threes feel most in their element at work. More than any other type, they crave achievement and recognition. And for most adults, that means killing it at their job. For threes who don't work outside the home, like stay-at-home parents, their natural tendency to hunt for external validation can emerge in other ways, such as comparing notes about whose kids figured out potty training in utero and were accepted early decision to Princeton while they were still in pre-K. Choosing success over substance, threes are revered in America. They're avatars of an American ideal, the smart, charismatic, ambitious, type A man or woman. But be careful. There's a fine line between a type and a stereotype. Some folks think all threes are like the character Don Draper from the AMC series Mad Men. Could a three who isn't spiritually mature become a success-crazed, image-obsessed, high achiever who charms and claws his or her way up to the top of the corporate food chain? Or a smile-flashing, glad-handing candidate stumping for votes at a state fair? Sure, but those are more stereotypes. Widely held, formulaic caricatures of a particular kind of person. Threes are people, not cliches. Like all of us, they're complicated, and they come in an infinite variety of shades and tones. They're not all CEOs or celebrities, nor do they aspire to be. They show up in almost every profession, from music to the mission field. They can be anyone from David Bowie to Dorothy Day, the founder of the Catholic Worker Movement. But they will believe the same lie. You're only as loved as your last success. As a university professor friend of mine once told me, just come listen in to the conversations that take place between professors at a faculty meeting at my school. When they're not reminding each other where they earned their PhDs, they're dropping the name of the prestigious journal that recently published one of their articles, or mentioning the invitation they've just received to give the plenary address at a well-known academic conference, or they're jockeying for tenure. When they're spiritually healthy, these charismatic, productive, go-get-em folks are authentic, visionary leaders and extraordinary builders who deserve our admiration. Like every number, though, when they're not mature and don't know their blind spots, they're an accident looking for an intersection. People will say threes are willing to do whatever it takes to get ahead. They care about titles, who's next in line for promotion, and who occupies the corner office. Threes make phenomenal salespeople, though they develop a kind of pride around their ability to turn it on and become whoever the customer wants them to be to make the sale. Because status matters so much to threes, so do status symbols. When they build equity, they find out which toys message success in their setting and then go get them. If they're investment bankers or professional athletes, it might be boats, second homes, or Teslas. If they're social justice advocates, they'll wear extra tattered clothing as part of a campaign to showcase their commitment to living in solidarity with the poor. Threes' issues with feelings become really clear when you see them at work. They live for setting a goal, killing it, setting a goal, killing it, setting the next goal, killing it. This is where threes get their energy, but it costs them. Imagine a three is working on an important project at work when their spouse or a friend calls to say they're feeling angry or upset with them about something. The three might have feelings about the situation as well, but having to deal with feelings threatens their ability to complete their project on schedule. So, they disconnect in order to stay focused on work. It's as if they say, I'm going to slip this emotion into my feelings to deal with later file and come back to it when I'm finished with this task. Now, how often do you think threes go back to deal with the feeling? Rarely. Once that project is done, they're on to the next one. Now, by midlife, what do you think a three's, quote-unquote, feelings to deal with later file looks like? Well, if it hasn't already burst, it's definitely overflowing. A three's ability to postpone or set feelings aside explains why people often experience them as superficial emotionally shallow, and difficult to connect with. Productivity, efficiency, goals, and measurable results. These are what threes care about and do better than anyone else, particularly efficiency. Threes want to get to the finish line of a project or task as quickly as possible. And this desire for efficiency affects relationships and decisions. Threes are pragmatic. They'll do whatever it takes to get the job done. To achieve a goal, a three might cut corners for the sake of expediency, which, quite frankly, can hurt the quality of their work. They're not necessarily unethical, but they might embellish or leave out a few facts to secure a position, angle for a promotion, or close a deal. As a songwriter, I occasionally did work with a successful publisher in New York City who was a textbook three. One day, I asked a fellow songwriter whether he thought this likable but shrewd publisher was a straight-up guy. He laughed and said, "Doug's not a liar, but he'll sculpt the truth if he has to." Threes often run people over on the way to the goal line, which they may or may not apologize for. They demand loyalty from their employees. So if your boss happens to be an immature three, I wouldn't openly question her decision to introduce a new product line unless you want to watch its big launch from the penalty box. Enthusiastic and confident, a three's talk style is promotion or sales. Threes would rather say too little than too much. They love selling people on an idea, the company they work for, the product they sell, the cause they champion, the hobby they enjoy. Threes are charismatic, and because they're adaptive and attuned to what others want from them, they know exactly what to say to inspire and motivate the people who work for them. They gravitate toward careers where moving up is dependent on making good impressions, and where promotions are handed out to those who best embody the values of the company or people they work for. Work is more fun than fun. Noel Coward. Wings. Now, threes with a four wing, man, that's a difficult combination. Fours, as we'll see in the next chapter, are romantics who care greatly about depth and authenticity. These people take having a rich inner life to a whole new level. Because threes can be chameleons and fours value authenticity, threes with four wings experience tremendous confusion and interior dissonance. At the same time they're projecting an image to please the crowd, the four wing is pointing at them and screaming, "You're a phony! You're a fraud!" Threes with four wings are more introspective and in touch with their shame and other feelings than threes with two wings. They're sensitive, artistic, emotionally intense, and they work more carefully on crafting the right image. Threes with four wings aren't as driven to be stars as three with two wings, but they can be more pretentious. Now, threes with a two wing, these folks are charming and intimate. They make great entertainers, politicians, salespeople, and pastors. When their lust for attention and recognition overtakes them, or when they feel unappreciated, however, they can become angry and hostile. More than three with four wings, they need to be stars. They actually embody some of the characteristics they have employed in an effort to be seen as more loving, generous, and kind. These threes still have a strong desire to be recognized for their achievements, but they also use some of their energy to help others be successful. Stress and security. When threes get stressed, they take on characteristic behaviors of unhealthy nines. They retreat to the couch with the remote or lose themselves in unproductive busy work. Seemingly worn out, they lose their characteristic optimism and confidence and become self-doubtful. Lacking motivation, Stressed-out threes might lose interest in working out, eating healthy food, and paying attention to their appearance. But when secure, they move to the positive side of six, where they become warmer and more in touch with their feelings and the feelings of others. Less competitive and defensive, threes in this space have more energy to devote to family and friends. No longer needing to be the star or in control, they care more about what's best for the group and want to connect to something that's bigger than they are. Threes who are connected to the positive side of six can finally experience being loved for who they are instead of for what they do. Spiritual transformation. Being a three and living in America is like being an alcoholic living above a saloon. In our success and image-obsessed culture, they are more revered and rewarded than any other number on the Enneagram. Is it any wonder spiritual work is hard for them? Because the adaptive strategies of their personality work so well and for so long, they might not stop working on themselves spiritually until midlife, or when they fail and can't cover it up. Inevitably, as threes awaken spiritually and become self-aware, they will feel naked and ashamed, and there's no getting around it. In that moment, what they need is a kind but strong friend who will call them back to the truth of who they are. Should they, start marketing and packaging themselves for mass consumption again? Actually, we all need at least one friend who can encourage us in the struggle to become ourselves. It's not work one should do alone. We all need to hear we are loved for who we are, but threes need to hear it until the day comes when they look in the mirror and see not an image so much as the reflection of a son or daughter of God. The healing message for three is, you are loved just for who you are. Angels sing when this message penetrates a three's heart. 10 paths to transformation for threes. 1. It's important for every number to develop a practice of silence, solitude, and meditation. But it's particularly essential for threes since you place such high value on activity and productivity. 2. Find a spiritual director to accompany you on your journey to reclaim your authentic self. It's a hard walk to do alone. 3. Challenge your definition of success and craft a new one based on your feelings, desires, and values, not those inherited from family or culture. 4. Don't wait until you have an affair, become an alcoholic, or become the youngest person in your family to have a heart attack before you ask the question, who am I if I'm not my persona? And do it now. 5. Material success and being real are not mutually exclusive. Success is great if the person responsible for it is the real you. 6. Take an inventory of who and what gets sacrificed while you're frantically racing to cross the finish line first. Is it spouse, kids, your health, or friendships? 7. Take a vacation and do not bring work with you. 8. Try being just another bozo on the bus. Resist the temptation to take the leadership reign or to be the center of attention. Instead, try being a collaborative team member who wants to help others shine and succeed. 9. Have at least one close friend with whom you can be real and vulnerable. As a three, you probably have a lot of friends, but make sure some of them are people who can love you when you are a complete disaster, not just when you're projecting an image of success. And 10, and this is important, read Richard Rohr's book, Falling Upward, A Spirituality for the Two Halves of Life, as well as his book, Immortal Diamond, The Search for Our True Self. Chapter 8, Type 4, The Romantic. If you've ever had that feeling of loneliness, of being an outsider, it never quite leaves you. Film director Tim Burton. So here are some statements you might hear fours use to describe what they're like. 1. I like things that are unconventional, dramatic, and refined. I'm definitely not a fan of the ordinary. 2. I never really felt like I belonged. 3. I have so many feelings in a day, it's hard to know which ones to pay attention to first. 4. Some people think I'm aloof, but I'm really just unique. 5. In social situations, I tend to hang back and wait for others to approach me. 6. Melancholy is comfortable for me, so it's annoying when people try to cheer me up. 7. I'm not like everyone else. Thank goodness. 8. I'm very sensitive to criticism, and it takes me a while to get over it. 9. I spend a lot of time trying to explain myself. 10. When people tell me what to do, I'm often tempted to do the opposite. 11. Sometimes I just disappear and go radio silent for a few days. 12. I'm really okay with sad songs, sad stories, and sad movies. Overly happy people, you know, they kind of give me a headache. 13. I feel there is something essentially lacking in me. 14. It's really hard for me to settle into a relationship because I'm always looking for my ideal soulmate. 15. I'm self-conscious. It's hard for me to find my place in a room full of people. 16. People say I'm too intense and my feelings overwhelm them. 17. I'm either an artist or highly creative. I come up with one amazing creative idea after another. It's executing them that's hard. 18. Lots of people misunderstand me, and it makes me frustrated. 19. I can pull people in, but then I get nervous and push them away. 20. I worry a lot about abandonment. Now, let me tell you what fours look like when they're in a healthy space. Fours have a considerable emotional range, and they manage it by not speaking or acting on every feeling they have. They know they don't have to be special to win God's unconditional love. These fours have found a way to live, for the most part, outside the pattern of shame and inferiority. They are deeply creative, emotionally honest and connected, and attuned to beauty. Now, average fours, they struggle daily with learning to accept themselves as they are. And these efforts are complicated as they seek their identity by exaggerating their uniqueness. These fours are coy. They want you to want them, but they play hard to get. Their melancholy often goes unchecked, causing painful distance between themselves and others. Average fours are moody, melodramatic, needy, and self-pitying. And unhealthy fours tend to be manipulative, playing the role of victim in order to create or maintain relationships. They find themselves lacking when compared to others, which only exacerbates their self-debasement. These fours feel so much shame, they're unable to connect to the very part of themselves that believes they can change and be better. Shortly before our first child, Kaylee, was born, my wife, Anne, began to research baby strollers. Like us, most of our friends were in their late 20s and either pregnant or popping out babies like vending machines. There was no shortage of people to ask for advice. "Everyone says we should buy a Graco," Anne announced over dinner one night. "Everyone?" I replied, arching one eyebrow. "I don't like it when someone says I should do something on the basis that everyone else is. I mean, during their yearly migration, thousands of Norwegian lemmings commit mass suicide because everyone they know is doing it." "Couldn't we be more creative?" I asked. "It's a stroller, not a prom dress," Annie said, using her "I'm 8 months pregnant, so don't screw with me" voice. "Noted," I said, quickly dropping the subject. However, the next morning, while flipping through baby catalogs, I happened upon an ad for a really cool stroller. Sure, it was expensive, and the manufacturer would have to ship it to us from their factory in England, but it was for our first child, right? I ordered one immediately. "Are you crazy?" Anne objected when I told her the news. "We could drive to Sears right now and buy a Graco for half the price." "We're having a girl. Don't you want her to have an English pram?" I said. "A pram!" Anne scoffed, shaking her head in disbelief as she turned on her heels and walked out of the room. "Mr. I Gotta Be Me strikes again." "Wait until you see it," I promised. "You'll thank me." 3 days before Anne's due date, the box containing our new pram appeared on our doorstep. I was eager to unveil and admire it until I saw the words, "Assembly required," writ large across the side of the carton. Now listen, when it comes to being handy, I'm genetically challenged. In fact, a career counselor once informed me that my spatial visualization and finger dexterity scores were more like those of a clam than a human being. "Feel free to write songs about tools. Just don't pick one up," he advised. "You'll hurt someone." I put aside my counselor's warning and took a deep breath. "I can do this," I declared over and over while dragging the box into the house. Once inside, I laid out the pieces to the pram on my living room floor. Holding the instruction manual open in one hand and scratching my head with the other, I surveyed the sea of nuts and bolts, springs, plastic fasteners, and other curious miscellanea at my feet. There were so many parts, I wondered whether I was expected to assemble a pram or a Boeing 747. Not one to back away from a challenge, I vowed I would have the pram ready to roll by the time Anne arrived home from work. But a few hours later, she found me slumped on the couch, staring at the ceiling and strumming a plaintive lament on my guitar like Leonard Cohen having a really bad day. "This is a metaphor for my life," I moaned, gesturing toward the unfinished stroller lying on its side on our living room floor, its bare axle sticking up in the air as if flipping me the bird. "I'm hopeless." Anne smiled and sat next to me on the couch. "You're a torture to yourself," she said, patting my hand. It wasn't the last time Annie has told me that over the course of our marriage. After all, I'm a 4 on the Enneagram. The 4's deadly sin. 4's feel something important is missing from their essential makeup. They're not sure what it is, whether it was taken from them or they had it long ago but lost it somewhere, only that the missing part is nowhere to be found and somehow they're to blame. The result is that they feel different, ashamed, uncertain about who they are, and ill at ease in the world. When I was 12, a bicycle repairman told me that my wobbly front tire was, quote-unquote, out of true, an expression I had never heard before, but immediately recognized as describing not just the bike, but myself. Out of true. That's how a 4 feels. 4s believe they alone have this tragic flaw. So when they compare themselves to others, which, by the way, is all the time, they feel inferior. As Richard Rohr puts it, 4s often feel ruled by a hidden shame. The joy and completeness others seem to enjoy is a daily reminder of what they themselves lack. There's a scene in the film version of Wuthering Heights that marvelously portrays a 4's inner sense of abandonment, loss, and separation. The main characters, Catherine and Heathcliff, are standing outside the home of their wealthy neighbors, the Lintons, who are hosting a party. With their noses pressed up against the window glass, Catherine and Heathcliff watch the elegantly dressed guests dance and laugh the night away. It's clear from the plaintive expressions on their faces that they wish they could join the festivities, but this is as close as they're gonna get. They're outsiders. Like Heathcliff and Catherine, 4s yearn to join the party of life, but the absence of that fundamental something disqualifies them from getting an invitation. They've been exiled to the island of misfit toys through some nameless fault of their own. It's no surprise, then, that envy is the deadly sin of 4s. They envy the normalcy, happiness, and sense of comfort with which others seem to move through life. They instantly spot who has a more interesting life, a happier family or childhood story, a better job, superior taste, a more privileged education, more distinguishing clothes, or unrivaled artistic talent. This envy, coupled with their pervasive sense of irredeemable deficiency, launches 4s on a never-ending quest to find the missing piece without which they never feel at home in the world. Sadly, by fixating on what's missing, 4s are blind to what's present in their lives, namely the many wonderful qualities they already possess. In case you were wondering, envy and jealousy are different. Envy has to do with desiring a characteristic others possess, while jealousy occurs when we feel like something we already possess is at risk of being taken away from us. Though envy is their big sin, 4s experience jealousy as well. For them, jealousy has to do with their fear of abandonment and expresses itself in the possessiveness they feel toward the people they love. All about 4s or romantics. As you might guess, 4s are prone to melancholy. Like the Old Testament figure Job, they can steep in lament. After all, it's hard to be chipper when the now-dated U2 song, "Still Haven't Found What I'm Looking For," or the Radiohead song "Creep," play like the soundtrack in the movie of your life. Don't, however, mistake melancholy for depression. The 4's pining and wistfulness has a bittersweet quality to it. If back in my 20s, you gave me the choice between going on an all-expense-paid trip to Disney World or to the west of Ireland where I could sit atop a cliff overlooking the sea and writing songs, I'd have taken Ireland in a heartbeat. As Victor Hugo, the author of Les Misérables, once wrote, "Melancholy is the happiness of being sad." Unfortunately, the four's melancholy can spiral into melodrama. A four can take a minor tiff with a friend and turn it into a Wagner opera, while a breakup with a girlfriend or boyfriend can rival a scene from Dr. Zhivago. All these theatrics often push away the people with whom the four most wants to make a heartfelt connection. As is the case with every type on the Enneagram, the strategies we employ to get our needs met so often work against us. You would think, given their desire to fit in and belong, that fours would want to try to be like everyone else to blend in more, but that's the last thing fours want. Listen, the need of the four is to be special or unique. They believe the only way they can recapture or compensate for their missing piece and finally secure an authentic identity is by cultivating a unique image, one that distinguishes them from everyone else. Perhaps then, people will love and accept them, and they can return from their exile on the island of misfit toys. The four's need to be special was never clearer to me than during a premarital counseling session I had with a couple named Roger and Linda. Roger, a skilled chiropractor, wasn't surprised when he learned he was a one. Linda thought she might be a four, but wasn't sure, so I described to her what fours were like. Halfway through, the lights went on. "Wait! There are other people just like me," she wailed, like I told her she had 6 weeks to live. "Well, I mean, sort of, but that can't be. I thought I was different," she said, burying her face in her hands and sobbing uncontrollably. Most fours could teach anguish as a second language. They're drawn to all things tragic, and their talk style is lament. They can play the role of the tragic romantic or sometimes the artist who suffers for their art, and they can always be counted on to tell sad stories. I don't talk about suffering or sad topics all the time, but when I do, it doesn't seem to have the same depressive effect on me that it does on others. In fact, sad stories move me as long as they're honest and not sentimental. The dark, intense emotions they arouse help me explore my own depths and find meaning. Over the years, however, I've learned that, you know, not everyone sees the world through the same lens I do. Back in 1990, I thought director Tim Burton's then new film, Edward Scissorhands, sounded like the perfect movie to take a girl out to see on a first date. Well, as it turns out, it wasn't for everybody. Fours are the most complex of all the types on the Enneagram. What you see is never what you get. There are always more layers of things going on underneath the surface. Their waters run deep. They ask themselves questions like, "Who am I? What's my purpose? How does the narrative of my life fit into the grand scheme of things?" These are the angsty, existential, reading Albert Camus on a rainy day kinds of questions that occupy a four. As you can imagine, fours wrestle with dissatisfaction. They always want the unavailable. What they have is never what they really want, and what they want is always somewhere out there, just beyond their reach. If only they knew that what they want is inside them. Fours don't have feelings. They are their feelings. Their feelings form the basis of their identity. Who on earth would they be without them? However, fours aren't satisfied with having, you know, regular run-of-the-mill feelings. They want supersized feelings. As a younger man, I never met an emotion I didn't want to embellish or intensify. If I felt good, I wanted to feel ecstatic. So I'd play a Sinatra big band record and invite 10 friends to dinner at the last minute. If I felt blue and introspective, I would listen to Samuel Barber's Adagio for Strings, anything to adrenalize whatever I was feeling in the moment. Given their love and over-identification with charged emotions, the four's mood is in a constant state of flux. They swing from one feeling state to another as deftly and quickly as a monkey swings from one tree branch to the next. As author Tom Condon points out, a four's issues and emotional landscape aren't much different from those of a teenager. Both share the sense of alienation, their conscious search for identity, their preoccupation with who they are as unique from others, a tendency to romanticize death, the conviction that no one else has ever felt what they feel, and a keen awareness of both the elation and pain of love. That is so spot on. Four's moods are like fast-moving weather patterns. In the blink of an eye, they can go from up to down, back to average, then plummet, then soar, and finally return to baseline. In fact, fours can feel overwhelmed from experiencing so many feelings at one time that when it comes time to organize them, they don't know which one to pick out and talk about first. Do you see the problem? If the identity of the four is hitched to their feelings, then it's always changing.